As we travel between Brisk and Lublin, want to address a topic that some of you have spoken to me about, that you would like addressed, and I think it's very important that people should know how to view this topic properly and what to say when people bring it up. Let me start by saying, after the Holocaust, the question was raised to various Torah giants of the generation, various Gedolei Yisrael, whether a new fast day should be instituted for the entire Jewish world in commemoration, in memory of the terrible tragedy of the Holocaust. The Chazon Ish responded that no such day should be established, based on the fact that no one in our generation, no group in our generation, has the power to institute new things in any way for the entire Jewish people. Reb Zalman Sorotzkin and the Ger Rebbe both said that it's hinted to in the Kinos for Tisha B'Av, which speaks about the terrible destruction that occurred in the Kehilo Shum, Shapira, Spire, Vermeiza, Worms, and Magenza, Mayence, during the Crusades, that since we do not create new days of mourning, not before Tisha B'Av or after, the proper day of mourning for all of the tragedies that occurred in Jewish history, and the tragedies of the Crusades did not happen on Tisha B'Av. They happened more specifically in the months of Iyar and Sivan, and we do have a memory of that in the fact that they made the prayer of Av HaRachamim to commemorate the martyrs of the Crusades. And it was originally said during the Shabbosos of Sfiras HaOmer, and therefore when we bench Rosh Chodesh Iyar and Sivan, we say Av HaRachamim. However, an actual day of commemoration is on Tisha B'Av itself. That's where we mention these tragedies. And part of the reason is, like we've explained in how to look at tragedy and tzaras in a person's personal life and in the life of Klal Yisrael, has to be put into perspective, not isolated to itself, but seen in the perspective of the entire Jewish history. And that perspective is the day that Beis HaMikdash was destroyed and we were thrust into exile, that all tragedies of the exile have to be put into the perspective of the entirety of Jewish history, and therefore the proper time to mourn them is on Tisha B'Av. The Knesset in Israel also had this idea raised, should there be a day of commemoration, and they decided that they would make the 27th day of Nisan the day of Holocaust Remembrance Day, referred to officially as Yom HaShoah VaHagvura, the day of Holocaust and heroism, bravery, strength. It's interesting why that day specifically was chosen, since that day is in the month of Nisan, when it is not proper really to make days of mourning. So the month of Nisan is a month of happiness. But that's not the major problem. The major problem is why that day was chosen. Any day of the year could have been chosen to be Holocaust Memorial Day, because some tragedy happened over the years of the Holocaust on every single day of the year. Why was that day, the 27th of Nisan, picked specifically? You have to understand that after the Holocaust, there was a significant minority, especially in Israel, that looked upon the Holocaust and those that went to their death not as martyrs, but as pathetic people who went as sheep to the slaughter. Yitzchak Greenbaum, who was a official in the secular Zionist movement, made a statement that it was pathetic that people lost their ability to act as humans. They became like rags. who didn't put up any resistance and went like sheep to the slaughter. And this minority of intellectuals and quasi-intellectuals, especially the new secular Zionist youth, looked askance at these martyrs as being relics of gullus, of people who don't fight, who don't stand up for their rights, who don't resist, who don't defend themselves, and who went as sheep to the slaughter. And they even gave them the derisive nickname, sabonim, soaps, people who permitted themselves to be turned into soap. The truth is that this is the way the non-Jewish world looks at us, but this is not a Torah perspective, right? It says in Tachnun, "Hayinu lag v'keles bagoyim." We were the derision of the nations of the world. "Nechshavnu ketzon l'tevach yuval." We were considered like sheep brought to the slaughter. But that's how goyim look at us, and therefore there were many who opposed having any day of remembrance for the martyrs of the Holocaust, because they were ashamed of them. They couldn't relate to them. They wanted to distance themselves from them. And therefore the only day that they could find where everyone could be satisfied to commemorate the martyrs of the Holocaust was the 27th of Nisan, which was the day of the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, where this minority could also identify with those strong, brave people who resisted and didn't go like sheep to the slaughter. And therefore, it's not just Yom HaShoah, it's not just the day of Holocaust, but it's a day of gevura, of strength, of resistance, of heroism. Now, Baruch Hashem, over the years since the Holocaust, predominantly Yad Vashem has broken this myth, as if the martyrs, the holy martyrs of the Holocaust, were people who went like sheep to the slaughter, and they could have defended themselves, they could have resisted, and they just refused because they were rags, because they were something less than human. And the truth is that many instances where Jews could rebel and could defend themselves, they did. And where they could escape, they escaped. But the chances for that were very few and far between, as we will explain according to the facts and the realities of what happened during the Holocaust. In fact, even though there is a dispute whether in fact Rabbi Nachum Zemba said this or not, there definitely were other Rabbonim, Rav Friedman, who did make this same statement. That was when questioned whether in the Warsaw Ghetto there should be an uprising or not. Rabbi Nachum Zemba supposedly said, at least as reported by one source, which is disputed by a different source, but again, other Rabbonim did make the same statement. They said the following, that when the non-Jew wants Jews to convert, and if they don't convert, then they will be killed, then the Kiddush Hashem, the sanctification of God's name, is to die and not to be converted. But when the non-Jew doesn't offer that option, and Jews are not offered the option, convert or be killed, but the non-Jew wants to kill Jews, that's his intention, then the Kiddush Hashem is to resist and to live al Kiddush Hashem as a Jew, and not to give in, if possible, and to be killed. That is the Kiddush Hashem, living Al Kiddush Hashem. So no one had any religious Torah reason not to resist when it was possible. However, the idea that maybe this was a gullus mentality, these were people who were in exile, and in exile the Jews were cowards and passive and didn't have the ability to resist. Even though the truth is that the Ibn Ezra says that that was the problem of the Jews who left Egypt. They were brought up with a slave mentality, and they weren't the nation that was capable of fighting and conquering Eretz Israel, and therefore that generation died in the desert, and a new generation had to arise. So there is such an idea that, for the most part, was not the reason why the majority of Jews were not able to defend themselves and rise up and rebel against the Nazi oppression. Another factor, which is also true, is that part of the tochacha, of the curse that God gives us when he will bring Holocaust and tragedy on us, it says in the Torah that you will run from like a driven leaf, kol olen nidath, and v'radaftem ve'ein rodeithashem. You'll run from out of fear, and nobody will be chasing you. That the Rabban Hashem will put morach bilvavchem. He'll put fear in your hearts, and the people won't have the courage to rise up. That's all part of the curse. It's all part of the tragedy. And that's something that is decreed by heaven, that is not within the free choice of a person. That's also part of the problem. But aside from all of this, there are very practical, natural explanations of why the majority of Jews ended up going to their deaths in the gas chambers and so on without resisting, that break this myth, the fact that they went as sheep to the slaughter and they could have done something else. Firstly, we have to understand that in the beginning, the Nazis took away all of the young people, healthy people, men, who they took them away to slave labor in the beginning and eventually executed them. And those are the people who could have led some kind of rebellion. They were taken away already way in the beginning of the war, before it was obvious or clear that there was a final solution going on. And therefore, the ones that were left were mostly the older people, women and children. Beyond that, the Jews had been put into ghettos for years already, before the final solution was started to put into effect. They were sick. They were hungry, starved, malnutrition, and overworked by becoming slave laborers. And these were not people who physically, most of them, could have had any kind of resistance. In addition to that, in order to have a resistance, people have to have the ability to have a population around them that is friendly, that can give them assistance. They have to have freedom of movement, and they have to have weapons. By the time it became clear of what the Germans really intended for the Jewish population, the surrounding populations, even those that were being occupied by the Germans, hated the Jews even more than the Germans, and many times gave them over into the hands of the Germans. They had no weapons, they had no freedom of movement, and therefore it was very difficult to create any kind of organized resistance. Next, the Germans never came out and said that they are going to take Jews to execute them and to destroy them. They always gave them the hope that if they acted properly, they would be spared. In the beginning, they took Jews that were sent to either be gassed in trucks or shot and thrown into ditches. And they told them that they're redeploying them, that they are taking the young, healthy men and redeploying them to work details, and they would work and support would be sent to their families according to their work. Even in Auschwitz, over the gate, it says, Arbeit macht frei, work makes you free. And the crematorium, the gas chambers, were portrayed as Red Cross showers and made to look like showers. Only the last minute people understood that it wasn't water that was coming from those spigots, but gas. You have to understand, the Germans did not just kill Jews indiscriminately. They had an organized war against Jews. And therefore, they did it in a way that would minimize any kind of possibility of resistance. And the nature of a person is, as long as he feels that if he cooperates, then he has hope of living, then he's not going to do anything that's going to endanger his life. And this is the nature of all people. Certainly people who have been crushed physically, mentally, as the Jews were by the Nazis by the time that they were taken out and sent to concentration camps. During the Sinai campaign, there was a division or a group of Israeli soldiers who were taken captive by two or three Syrian soldiers, and if they all had resisted, they could have overpowered. Some of them would have died, but the majority would have gone free, and they didn't resist. They went like sheep to the slaughter. Nothing against them. That was human nature. They knew that if they would make waves, that some of them would surely die, and they had the feeling that if they would just cooperate, then they would be taken prisoners of war, but their lives would be spared. And therefore, the natural human desire to survive took place. You have to remember, there were also a million war prisoners that were not Jewish, that were goyim, that were soldiers. None of them ever rebelled. None of them ever resisted. We also know of a situation in South America a few years ago. Some Israeli tourists there were taken hostage by terrorists, and they also didn't resist. There were two terrorists guarding them, and there were six or seven of them. They could have rushed and resisted, and maybe some of them would have died, but some of them would have escaped. But they didn't resist until they heard their captors discussing between themselves, they're taking them out to execute them. When they knew there was no more hope, then they resisted. And then they overcame their captors. One of them was killed, but the others were taken to safety. The same thing, the death march in Bataan of American soldiers by the Japanese, they also did not resist, hoping that if they would be good boys, that they would survive. So that's the nature of people. Also in the World Trade Center, the people on the airplanes didn't resist the terrorists. It's only the third plane that already people had given them messages of what happened to the first two, and they knew that there was no hope of surviving. Then they resisted and they overpowered the terrorists and had the plane crashed in a relatively safe place where they died, but at least they didn't cause the death of other people. But it's only after it was clear that there was no hope that these people resisted. The first two planes, where they thought they still had hope, they didn't realize what was going to happen, they didn't resist. So that is the nature of a human being. Also, resisting meant not only danger for the person who's resisting, but the Germans took revenge. And anyone who resisted, other Jews were killed as revenge for the resistance. People's families were killed. So a person who resisted, who made waves, knew that he was not only endangering himself, but he was endangering others. And that is not a simple thing, whether a person should take that take that course where he knows that he is endangering other people. Give you an example of something from my own experience. I was once visiting New York, and I was on the periphery of Borough Park, and I saw a large group of people that had gathered, non-Jews, Puerto Ricans, and the press was there, and the radio, television, and I asked someone what was going on, and they said that two Jews from a certain group beat up two Puerto Ricans, just picked them off the street and beat them up because there had been fire bombings of shuls in the area, and they wanted to make a statement that Jews just won't sit back and take this, but they're going to react. So they indiscriminately picked two Puerto Ricans who weren't necessarily involved in these fire bombings at all to give a message that, you know, beware. In any case, I was walking on, and I see that there are four Puerto Ricans with iron poles surrounding me. And one of them says to me, your friends beat up our friend. So I said, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't have any friends here. I'm from Miami, and I just got off a plane, and I'm only a visitor here. So he said, well, one thing's for sure, you're not going to get back to Miami. And then I realized this is pretty serious. This was not a welcoming committee for me to enter New York. And I tried to divert their attention, so I started asking questions. I said, tell me, I don't know what group is that you're talking about, of these people who beat up your friends. Could you explain what it is? Describe it to me. I'm not aware of what's going on. And I kept them involved in conversation. And after we came to a corner, I said, you know, it's very nice speaking to you, but I really must go. And I turned right, and they continued going straight. And when I was out of their eyesight, I ran as fast as I could run in my life. When I got back to Miami, I gave my Shabbos drush on this idea. Here are people who indiscriminately decided to show resistance, Jewish strength, for Jewish honor. And in fact, what they did was endanger other people as myself. So Jewish honor is very important. Jewish blood is also important. And only a person who has the right to make decisions that affect other people should make those decisions, and not somebody who irresponsibly makes decisions that are a show of Jewish force that may endanger other Jewish lives. Also, in order to resist and to join resistance groups, people had to leave their families, and the families were in terrible, terrible situations. For a person to leave his family at that time was a very, very big decision to make, whether it was the proper thing to do or not to do. And also, there wasn't too much chance of joining resistance movements, because the resistance movements of the non-Jewish world were most of the part anti-Semitic and didn't want Jews to join them, and if they did, they ended up killing them also. In the ghetto, Warsaw ghetto, also there was a difference of opinion whether resistance was in fact called for or not, because it was clear that in the Warsaw ghetto, any resistance they could have made would not have saved the ghetto. The resistance was only to take some Germans with them. The Nazis had the ghetto surrounded with tanks and heavy artillery, and the Jews at best had maybe some handguns and rifles. They knew that they could not survive. What they would do is at least not go and die without taking some Germans with them. So there were differences of opinion, whether that was the proper thing to do or not. Maybe by resisting, they were bringing greater or faster calamity on the ghetto than would have happened under normal circumstances, and that meant shortening the lives of people, even by days. And every second of life is important. We desecrate the Shabbos to save a person's life, even if it means only extending his life another 5 minutes, another minute. So this was not the course of action to take. Also, under normal circumstances, maybe if the ghetto was liquidated as other ghettos were, there would be a chance of some people to escape and survive. But if they made this resistance, maybe that would take away and make the chances less possible of anyone escaping and surviving. On the other hand, since the situation was one that it looked from under natural circumstances, the ghetto was going to be liquidated and most people were going to die anyway, then maybe it was an idea to resist and at least to take some Germans with them, and who knows, maybe under the circumstances other people could have escaped or survived. All these considerations were considerations that we today, looking back, can't judge these people. I'm sure that all of them, whatever they decided to do, did so based on the information that they had, and it's easy to be a Monday morning quarterback and know what should have been done But according to the information they had and the situation they were in, we are not the ones to judge whether they make the right decisions or the wrong decisions. Whatever decisions they made based on the circumstance, based on the knowledge that they had, and I'm sure they did it l'shem shamayim. There's another idea over here, and that's something that is difficult for people to hear sometimes, and that is the following. It says that Yaakov Avinu, when he finally met Esav, he bowed down to him 7 times in submission. And then Esav's mercy was aroused, and he did not harm Yaakov, and Yaakov was able to survive his meeting with Esav. The Sfarno says that that is a lesson for all generations. Sometimes situations arise that a Jew has to be submissive and has to subdue himself to his enemy. And he says that if the biryonim, the thugs that took control of the Jewish people prior to the destruction of the Second Temple, and they refused to give in to the Romans, and they wanted to rebel against the Romans, and they forced the hand of the Jewish people against the advice of Gedolei Yisrael, like Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who said that we are not on the level, not on the spiritual level or physical level, to rebel against the Romans, and therefore we should give in and live under Roman rule. And they refused to do that, and they forced the issue, and they burned the storehouses and made the Romans bring the siege to an end, and just ended up destroying the Second Temple. Says the Sfarno, had they subdued themselves, submitted themselves, had a little hachna, a little submission, then maybe the Second Temple would not have been destroyed. The Medrash says by the Asar Arugei Malchus, the 10 martyrs that were killed by the Roman government, Rabbi Hanani ben Tradyon, when they took him to burn him with the Sefer Torah, so he said some Kabbalistic words, and the fire that the executioner lit moved away from him. And this happened a few times. So the executioner said, "Rabbi, if you can do this, then why don't you just get up and run away?" He said, "Because we have been told in the heavens that this is a decree that we can't possibly avoid, and if I run away from you, God has lions and tigers and bears that can kill me." They were in a situation where they knew 100% there was no way they could avoid this decree, and therefore they accepted it. And if a person is in a situation where he doesn't know if he can avoid the decree or not, he has to try everything in his power to resist. Somebody comes to kill you, don't just kill him after he makes the attempt, but if you know for sure someone is intending to kill you, you get up early in the morning, kill him first. Self-defense is a mitzvah to save one's life and to resist. But in a situation where it's obvious that there's nothing you can do, where it comes to a situation already where it's obvious that that's the will of God and there's nothing you can do, to resist in a futile way is not the Jewish way. There, when a person sees that there is no way, naturally, that he can escape, then he has to exhibit the strength of character and say, "I accept this as God's will, and I go with the strength of knowing that I'm submitting to God's will." In fact, the Medrash says that Yaakov Avinu was punished because he bowed 7 times to Esav, and 7 holy places were destroyed because of that. That seems to contradict the fact that his bowing to Esav is what gave him the ability to survive. The answer is that it says that when Yaakov bowed, he wasn't bowing to Esav, he was bowing to the Shechinah. He was bowing to God's presence. But because it appeared that he was bowing to Esav, that's why he was punished. The Jew has to submit not to the goy, not to the enemy, not to the situation per se, but to submit to God, knowing that it's God who brought about this situation. So, appearing to submit to the non-Jew, and out of fear of him, that is something negative. But if the Jew knows that it's not the non-Jew that's creating this situation, but ultimately this is the will of God, and I'm submitting to the will of God, but not to the non-Jew. The Tozer Rosh Hashiva, Rav Avram Yitzchok Bloch, when he was taken out to be executed, and the German hit him with the butt of his gun, and he said to him, Rabbiner, Rabbi, where's your God now? So he defiantly looked the German in the eyes, and he said, he's not only my God, he's your God too, and one day the whole world will see that. That is strength. There was nothing to resist. There was nothing to futilely make an attempt to do something that could not have helped at all. The strength then was to be able to have the strength of character and conviction up till the very end. Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, before his death, told the people with him that they were going as sacrifices for the sake of world Jewry, of American Jewry. And Judaism would continue on because of their great sacrifice. And therefore a sacrifice has to be done with pure intention. And no one should have bad thoughts or anything that would invalidate their pure and holy sacrifice. That is strength. The story is told of I don't remember who it was, a Rav was taken out to be executed, and he said to his executor, the German, the Nazi, said, it's normal that a person be given his last request before he's executed. So the German said, fine, what's your last request, Rabbi? He said, I would like to pray a little bit. He said, fine, say your prayers. And which the Jew, the Rabbi, then made the following bracha, first in Hebrew, and then translated into German, so the Nazi should know what he said. Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam Shelo Asani Goy. Blessed are you, God, who has not made me a non-Jew. And story is also told of a Jew taken away to be executed, to be killed, who said to the Germans taking him, for all the money in the world I wouldn't trade places with you to be the beast that you are and not the victim that I am. I would choose to be the victim rather than the sadistic beast that is the perpetrator and the criminal in this situation. So this is Jewish valor and strength, not understood by the secular world. Secular world understands brute strength, physical might. People think that they can control everything and don't realize that we are in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we can't control everything in this world, and there are things beyond our control. America learned that lesson after the World Trade Center a little bit, that there's not, even with all the power of America, the things that they can't control and can't protect and can't resist. And if that's the case, then to fault the Holocaust martyrs that they went as sheep to the slaughter, implying they could have done something else, right, and they did something that was something we should be ashamed of, is a terrible, terrible libel against these people. And based on all of the information and explanation that we've given, we can understand that these people were Kedoshim and Tahorim, and may their memory be a blessing for all of us.